hustle. FFC killed Cody Rhodes, drove him back to WWE. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the most electrifying, most must listen to, most powerful podcast in sports entertainment. Welcome to FFC.
Celebrate good times. Cody's gone.
I am.
Spoke it into existence.
I am your esteemed host, grand overlord of all things related to sports entertainment, Damian Ellinghouse, accompanied as always by good friend and lover of sudden strange disappearances, Ryan Doyle.
How are you, sir?
Ryan, we are literally the most powerful podcast on the market right now. It's not talk is Jericho. It's not
Insurrection Co.
It's not Major Pod. It's not Wade Keller. It's not Wrestling Observer. No. It is FFC. Ladies and gentlemen, if you follow wrestling, or even if you don't really follow wrestling, in which case, welcome to the podcast. Not sure why you're listening, but glad to have you. We have a history of just like nailing it. Like every time, having the best take you can have on any situation ever. We mentioned that there was a lovely match between two gentlemen named Wheeler Yuta, Lee Moriarty, both on television, had a little teeny tiny guy on a podcast, little know-nothing wrestler named Bryce Donovan, number one contender for Creative Pro Wrestling. By the way, go give well wishes and maybe consider sending some money to Bryce as he recovers from a collapsed lung, because he became number one contender on a collapsed freaking lung. Literally Kurt Angle of Long Island is what he is. I was too drunk at that show. I said some embarrassing things to Matt Cardona, probably, but I bought some glasses that then I had to stare at for a while because I was like, what the fuck is this acronym? I don't get it. And then 2 days later, I was like, oh, it's woo woo woo, you know it. Because I was like, couldn't figure it out. But
pointing at the picture of him winning the IC title and telling him, oh, that's every Long Island, you lived every Long Island kid's dream there. He's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. I was like,
hanging with our boy Max Caster, baby. We are officially platinum.
Did ask him to come on. He politely told me that he is far too big for this podcast, which is absolutely right. No, just kidding. But Max was absolutely a treat to hang out with. Got to tell Mark Sterling that I was impressed with his work with Jade. Too sweeted Luke Gallows, who like kind of subtly told me like, no, I'm not taking a picture unless you pay for it, which is fair. I get it. You make your money. I understand you're working Lynbrook. So I get it.
He's working the Knights of Columbus, brother. Pay
the biz quiz. So Creative Pro Intoxication, it's now up on Independent Wrestling TV. But like I said, shortly after we learned that Bryce had a collapsed lung, he had successful surgery, should be on the road to recovery soon. After he won the triple threat, got attacked by VSK. Very boo. Rude, very boo, boo. Very boo. But
the man has a lung, bro.
He has a lung, one lung, and you kicked him in it. Very rude. Not nice stuff. But we wish him the speediest of recoveries and can't wait to have him back on after he inevitably wins the Creative Pro Wrestling Championship. But anyway, made Bryce Donovan responsible for him being famous right now. Who else? What else have we gotten right? What other perfect take have we had, Ryan?
Everything.
But today, ladies and gentlemen,
yes, we predicted that nobody likes Brandy in the locker room.
We didn't. No, we
not
didn't.
One,
we,
not one person. We didn't not say one that. Individual.
No, Ryan. We didn't say that. No. Ladies and gentlemen,
did we mention a certain person who was in the midst of contract negotiations, maybe leaving?
Oh, well, did we? Surely
did we?
Not.
Did we will somebody out of existence of their show?
All I know is one moment somebody was on TV And the next moment, they were not on TV. And I don't know. I don't know, Ryan. Cody Rhodes, ladies and gentlemen, Cody Rhodes has left AEW in news that is making shockwaves around the world. Have you heard enough hot takes about this topic? Hope you're ready. Buckle in. You're getting to get a hot one tonight. Ryan, I was so excited to get on this microphone and talk about this that not only was I on time, but I have two beverages with me today. I've got two. This one is a giant glass of bourbon and Coke. And this is Brooklyn's Black Chocolate Stout. And I am just I'm just excited. I told my wife I'm going to yell. I'm sorry about it. I'll probably come out tipsy. We will figure it out afterwards. So that's what I'm drinking. Is that Polar Grapefruit I see?
It's Polar Georgia Peach for our number one Georgia boy. That's right, Cody. This non-alcoholic beverage is for you, brother.
That thing better be full of gin.
Hey, man, I have a lot of drinking to do with the Grand Canyon this weekend, so...
That's what everybody does when they go to the Grand Canyon. They drink, of course.
You have to.
You gotta litter. It's Mother Nature's garbage dump. That's what it is. It's Mother Nature's landfill.
Bro, it's fake. It's a hologram.
Fake canyon.
Teddy Roosevelt invented the hologram in 1912.
Well,
you know what? There's a bunch of Mormons and shit out here. We need a giant cavernous dump.
Giant cavern between us and the Mormons. Okay, well, Sláinte.
Sláinte.
All right, so look, here's the deal. All right, for anybody that is not aware, right, in case, like I said, if you're living under a wrestling rock or if you just don't care enough about this to know, Cody Rhodes, founding member of AEW, EVP, very special person, leader of the face of the revolution, more than one wrestling royal family, has left AEW, started the company, started all back in 2017, responding to Dave Meltzer saying that, no independent would be able to sell out, Chicago, right? It was Chicago was the United
He was
United
talking
Center.
Generally of like a 10,000.
Just any 10,000. Yeah. Cody and the Bucks responded. Cody said, I'll take that bet, Dave.
I'll take that challenge, Dave. And then I'll remove my brain and surgery and take that challenge.
Proceeded to help create All In. To that point, the largest independent, probably to this point still, the largest independent wrestling show of all time. Did in fact sell out the United Center, or at least got over 10,000 people in it. Cody Rhodes courageously booked himself to beat Nick Aldis for the NWA Heavyweight Championship, which, if we're being honest, Nick Aldis probably shouldn't have had it for that long in the first place. But no disrespect to Magnus, whatever. Goes on to, of course, create AEW after Tony Khan says, I got Papa money and Jacksonville's bad and I don't care about Fulham, so how about wrestling, my true number one love? And here we are today. Now, Ryan, jokes aside, this is objectively probably the most shocking outcome, turn of events, right?
Yes. We talked about this a little bit couple weeks ago. I went back to listen to the episode today just to catch up and make sure exactly what we said. And we landed on the idea that, you know, we were like, if there's one person that we expect to go back, I think we said Jericho or we said Cody, you know, but we ultimately ended on the decision that it was too soon for Cody. I mean, it's kind of hard when you're a founding father of a company that you would just leave so suddenly. And the pieces fell in place to have that decision made for him a couple weeks ago where we thought he might have showed up at the Rumble, but that wasn't the case. And once he showed up back on TV, you know, I figured everything was all fine and dandy. Then I went back and listened to his promo in the ring with the ladders in that tiny ass arena that they were in DC. And he said, get ready for the wild ride coming up. So let's talk about some things to begin with before we continue the discussion.
Okay.
Is this a work?
Okay, so here's the deal. No, this like definitely is not a work at this point. Now, is it fun to have conspiracy theories? Of course it is. So my favorite conspiracy theory is that Cody Rhodes departs WWE after wrongfully being shoved in the mid-card and, you know, being a tag specialist and Intercontinental champion once, right? Or United States champion, yep. One of the two. After his little jaunt with Legacy and Legacy, right? Him, Orton, DiBiase.
Right, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Immediately goes on a quest to make himself the biggest wrestler in the world. Joins up with Ring of Honor, starts working with New Japan, becomes Ring of Honor world champion, becomes NWA champion, becomes maybe IWGP heavy American United States champion at some point, goes to become a member of Bullet Club, does All In, and eventually helps spur along the creation of AEW, the first true competition to WWE in 20 years. Does all of this because, as he showed throughout everything, first by mocking Stardust, then by constantly joking about his time in WWE and being the Elite, to then creating AEW, talking about a revolution, breaks a Triple H's cross with a sledgehammer, says there's more than one royal family in wrestling, which Cody tried to say in his last promo in AEW was about him and the fans, which, like, boo, shut up. That's not what you were saying, whatever. And does all of this for the sole purpose of proving that he is, in fact, one of the biggest wrestlers in the world, leverages that into contract negotiations and comes back to WWE, a bona fide top guy, paid like a top guy, main event, goes on to win heavyweight champions, becomes one of the faces of WWE, and retires shortly after, his legacy safely intact. That's a very fun conspiracy theory. And while there's some elements of truth, Cody, of course, felt spurred by WWE, as so many does. But unlike so many others, Cody was a Rhodes. And Cody, ever the able businessman and ever the guy who's willing and wanting to politic backstage and make friends and make connections, was able to leverage this in a way that few other wrestlers have ever been able to. To be completely honest, it's hard to think of many other people with such a lasting impact upon leaving a promotion. Vern Gagne comes to mind in creating the AWA after leaving NWA. Kind of one of the, you know, Antonio Inoki and Giant Baba creating New Japan and All Japan out of Riki Dozan's JWA. But it's a short list. It's a very short list of people that have had this type of impact. The main reasons I don't think this is a work is, frankly, because the reasons why he left make sense for me for both parties. Also, there's a lot of people saying that it's not a work that, like, wouldn't need to get injected into this. And frankly, I really do think it would, like, would it be fun for this to be a work? Yes. But, like, it would feel real fucking tacky if it was, at least a little bit.
And that's the main point. What's the benefit of the work, right? Don't work yourself into a shoot, brother. Well, there's no work to be shot in because Cody is taking the smart direction in this if he is indeed leaving. And you brought up a lot of great points, too. You know, think about the context back in 2015 when he was let go.
2016, yeah.
2016. There was no AEW. I think the highest point that he probably would have reached was New Japan, which he did.
Yep.
Ring of Honor, which he did.
Yep.
Quite frankly, I think that he would probably may have this decision very much sooner if AEW didn't exist. But we forget Cody was the one to answer that challenge from Dave. Cody was the one to kind of be the face, you know, where obviously the diehards and the know-it-alls of that time knew who Bullet Club were. They were the hottest thing on the product. They knew who Kenny Omega was. They knew all the Young Bucks matches from stateside and from overseas in Japan. It was the cool thing at the time. But he really put a noticeable face on it. He put a noticeable name attached to it. And one who had a chip on his shoulder, who was ready to prove himself. But, you know, if the old adage goes, when you leave WWE, you probably will come back, but you better come back a different person. And I think that was always Cody's plan to begin with. Obviously things changed, you know, but he is a founding father of AEW. He always will be. And I think what this comes down to is, you know, obviously you have the rumors of he wasn't getting along with Tony. He wasn't getting along with the other executive vice producers, who is Kenny, the Young Bucks, Omega, Jericho. But, Alvarez last night said on his podcast that that wasn't true. They were all, in fact, I think he said the last year was probably their greatest creative output. And, you know, just overall in terms of working relationship, it was fine. You know, I don't think it was really akin to that. I think it just comes down to money, baby. So, I think that's really what it just came down to, you know. The cupboard is full. We've been saying this in the last week, and I think the first couple episodes, I think when Moxley debuted, we had the discussion of, okay, well, what's going to be the other side of it, right? Who's going to flip to WWE? I don't think we said Cody at the time, but, no. You know, obviously, one way or another, it was going to happen. But this is the perfect storm of everything. WWE, whether they want to say it or not, needs this. When Cody is set to re-debut, it will probably be the biggest return of a wrestler, or debut, for lack of a better term, since AJ Styles came through in Royal Rumble. I'm not comparing the two. AJ was probably a bigger you know, show up than anybody else at the time, and probably will be for the next decade. But look, Cody's walking into a situation where he holds all the cards.
Here's the thing about it is,
yeah,
all of this is 100% right. I would argue this might be bigger than AJ for a few reasons. AJ was long seen as a guy that it was incredibly surprising that he never went to WWE. And after he left Impact to go to New Japan, that was when it started being like, well, does he finish his career in New Japan? Well, that doesn't seem likely that he would, you know, stay there for the rest of his career. Is AJ Styles going to retire? Well, sure. You know, he's in his mid-30s by that point. He had been wrestling a very long time at a very high pace. So, sure. But realistically, no one expected him to leave. So, did you expect AJ Styles to show up in WWE at the Royal Rumble? Nah, I think you'd be lying if you said you did. But the rumors were, of course, there. I would end up, yeah, we said, you know, we would expect Cody to go back to WWE. But like you said, did we expect it to be, you know, three, not really even 4 years into AEW's existence? No, no, I don't think we could have.
Not,
I don't think we could have seen that. I would have guessed Jericho before Cody, to be honest with you. And I would argue that you're 100% right in that this is something WWE desperately needs. Look, WWE has no problems getting eyes on the product when it comes to the general public, right? Raw and SmackDown consistently do great numbers, but, you know, maybe not by their previous metrics of the 90s, but like, whatever, suck it up, your babies. Nothing else comes close. AEW is the single thing that comes closest outside of, like, you know, the finals in NBA or, you know, the Super Bowl, like big sporting events. So,
right.
Does Brock Lesnar, Ronda Rousey bring eyes to the product? Of course it does. WWE will get talked about forever. They got a Super Bowl ad, yada, yada, yada. But Cody is one of the few crossover stars in AEW where, like, there's a decent chance that any casual person would be like, I know the name Cody Rhodes. And I don't think you could say that for really anybody else outside of Chris Jericho, to be honest, or maybe Jim Ross. Like, I could see people being like, oh, yeah, that's the WWE commentator guy. He's on a short list of people in AEW that have broad recognition. He's got two of his own shows. And if there's one thing Vince, does Vince love people having things outside of WWE? No. But what Vince does love is somebody that will get completely unrelated people to go view his product, which is what Cody Rhodes does. When, and let's be honest, Cody is not like going to go run for Senate or go do. He's going to go
so
to
stupid.
He's
man.
Going to WWE. Yeah. It will be by far the biggest, most splashy thing that they have done. Maybe since the first time Ronda showed up,
Ronda, Bobby, Drew McIntyre come
Brock,
to mind.
Brock
but
coming
still.
Back. A short list of true.
We're talking 5 years ago, though, you know?
Yeah, this is a real long time ago. And to address what you said a little bit before that about, you know, the rumors behind it, look, Wade Keller has a lot of respect in the industry. He tends to, you know, have good sources and, you know, has name recognition for a reason. I don't think a lot of what he wrote is bullshit. But the idea that like Cody and Brandy were so universally disliked that, you know, they're writing. Do I believe Cody had his own bus that he traveled in? Yeah, I do. Do I believe that Cody had a circle? Sure, why not? But everybody who's ever spoken about Cody, and this includes like people that know people in the AEW locker room that like we know, because yes, we have sources of our own, has said nothing but universal praise for Cody and his willingness to like help people out. And frankly, I have no reason to disbelieve that. That's not really a criticism I feel you could ever really leverage against Cody, ego or otherwise. He's obviously always been shown to like be someone that's like willing to put his body on the line. He at points is willing to job, and like he's always been nothing but helpful by anyone that talks about him. I don't know anything about Brandy. Do I believe that there might be some people that think like she doesn't have enough experience to be in the position she is? Sure. But you know what? At the end of the day, she's also a black woman and people probably wouldn't like her for that alone. I'm not willing to buy into any idea that, oh, she's so universally disliked I don't believe that. I don't.
Yeah. As soon as that came out, I was like, that's so weak.
It's just
I don't know.
I don't buy it.
That just screams one source to me or, you know, look, we shit on Cody. We're not going to hide behind it. We shit on Cody, the character. But what I have read, I never met the guy. But, you know, from what Bryce has told me, from what Rex has told me, Cody, the person, Cody, the individual is, quite frankly, a mensch. And he is a very good person. From the stories you've read of him taking care of Luke Harper's son and taking care of the family, like it wrenches at your heart, you know. And Cody is... Cody is a generational talent, but in the sense, I can't really think of the term here, but like, you know, he has a bloodline established with him. You know what I mean? For that reason alone, you're pulling for him. You've watched his family wrestle for the last four decades
and
maybe even beyond that.
Yes.
So, you know, a lot of this is, it's not, there's no, bro. Tony is sending over Cody to infiltrate WWE, bro. No, it's not. There's no conspiracy behind this. This is just business, you know? Cody, I think, really wanted to be the face of AEW. A little delusional, maybe, with all the other guys that were there already, with all the other guys that were... coming in. And I'll say this, you know, I think we really wanted Kenny Omega to be the star of that show. And outside of his title reign, you know, I think when we had first expectation, we were expecting him to just absolutely dominate. And I'm not saying that he did, but like I expected a different scale, but expectations change, plans change, you know? And so I'm just looking at a tweet now that what may have contributed to this as well is that Cody lost booking powers. Obviously, this is not confirmed. But, you know, with the product that it is, it's really born out of that time from Ring of Honor. It's really born out of that time from the indies in the mid-2010s, 2010s, whatever you want to say. And he wasn't really part of that circle, you know? So I don't know, maybe it was just like, hey, Cody, you did as much as you could here, you know? But you're, you know, I think we want to look through other people, through new people for output, because, you know, maybe it is, he was just part of his circle, you know, in his own world, just focusing on his storyline. We don't know. What I will say, though, is that I would believe this if this was the case a couple weeks ago, because this, correct me if I'm wrong here, the rumors of their supposed contract negotiations have been going on since the beginning of the new year, correct?
Yeah, about.
I would not be surprised if Cody himself or somebody in Cody's camp, you know, throughout those Rumble rumors, just to see what the reaction would be. And honestly, Cody had to be happy at the reaction that the fans gave. Like, wow, it would be fucking cool if he returned to the Rumble. Like, you know, I think fans, once the bait was given to them, were like, yeah, I'm ready for Cody to be back in WWE. I think he would kill it. And I think once he heard that, he'd be like, okay, so there is a life after AEW then. I don't have to stay here for the sake of staying here because, you know, I am a founding father. So yeah, I think it really just came down to that. But folks, it's business, you know? And even Moxley, who hates Kevin Dunn with a passion, who is furious at Vince, furious at that creative team, despite all the shit he talked about in his book, at the end of it, he's like, yeah, but never say never. And that's what all those guys say, man, you know, because money talks, money walks. I'm not saying like these guys are all greedy and that's what it comes down to, but it does come down to a business standpoint. And when the moment is right, these guys have to strike because they are one injury away from not doing this anymore. They're one day from, you know, having their lives changed. So they're very much in the moment. And, you know, that's really just what it comes down to.
And do you hear that? Do you hear that sound, Ryan? Oh, that's a... Oh, dear. Oh, no. That sounds like a counterpoint. So... Oh, yep. There it is.
It does it now. Oh.
Counterpoint.
Here we go.
Listen up, dopes. Here's reality.
You're saying all these nice things about Cody. That's so nice.
You think I didn't have the shit talk ready for it? You think I'm going to spend 15 minutes eulogizing this man? Oh, no. Because that's Cody the person. But let's talk about the American Nightmare.
The mic is yours, Damian.
Let's talk about Cody fucking Rhodes. Here's the deal, Ryan. You know what Tony Khan did? Tony Khan said, you know, I just don't think you're a top tier talent. And Cody said, what? You pay me, friend. And Tony said, that's because you're my favorite mid-carder. That's what Tony did to Cody Rhodes. Tony informed Cody Rhodes that you are a mid-carder. Do you know why Cody Rhodes is a mid-carder? Because Cody Rhodes made himself a mid-carder. And that is the funniest part of this story. Cody Rhodes started AEW with the Bucks and with Kenny Omega, but make no mistake, Kenny Omega was not the person selling those tickets, putting those asses in seats. That's entirely the Jacksons and Cody Rhodes. The Jacksons, no slouches themselves in the business aspect, have always known how to market themselves, but to a very particular audience. But it was Cody that brought legitimacy to the places he went. Ring of Honor had their most success when Bullet Club showed up, and that is entirely on the backs of Adam Cole joining Bullet Club, on Cody Rhodes, on the Bucks. Some people would say it might have ruined Ring of Honor like it ruined New Japan. And I'm not here to argue whether that could or could not be true, because it's entirely dependent on what you liked about those promotions at the time. But
In the sense that Ring of Honor expected to get all that talent, yeah.
Yeah, and they lost.
They got the rug pulled under them, let's
they
be honest.
They absolutely
here.
Did, because All In was essentially like a New Japan Ring of Honor, like AAA, you know, predominantly NWA situation. And Ring of Honor expected to benefit from that, and really what happened is they leached all the other talent and essentially killed Ring of Honor. Not Impact, because they are cockroaches and they will live on forever. who, by the way, they have their own little fun contract dispute thing in Josh Alexander, which, like, that might be more of a work, but we'll talk about that later. Anyway, Cody Rhodes comes in and immediately has a 5-star match with his brother in what is no exaggeration, one of the most emotional matches I've ever seen. Both of them, like that to me is Dustin Rhodes' swan song. I'm not saying anything he's done after has been bad, but that match was the swan song for Dustin Rhodes as a performer. And that was Cody's like, oh fuck. Like he might actually be a main event guy here. Like shit, this is a big deal. Then he goes on to the feud with Jericho and you get the Inner Circle Elite shit. And here's where the stumble starts. Cody does what nobody thought made sense and goes, oh, I'm going to challenge. If I don't win this, I will never challenge for the AEW championship again. And everybody said the same thing, Ryan. What did everybody say? Everybody said, why? It's been like 6 months. Yeah. This seems a little soon to do that stipulation. Like, it's not like you lost to him before. Or like, this is, why are you doing this? It's your company. It's weird to do this storyline. So then he loses and MJF betrays him. And then you get the absolutely terrific feud between him and MJF and that great steel cage match versus Wardlow. And to be completely honest, Cody Rhodes at this point feels like a main event guy. He main evented, I believe that was Revolution when he faced Jericho. He main evented that. He felt like a main event guy. But then, well, now what does Cody do? Well, now, you know. So Cody can't challenge for the championship, so they create a championship for him, the TNT title. And then he goes on to have his open challenge, very much akin to John Cena's open challenge for the United States Championship in WWE. It helps legitimize the belt. It brings in all of this talent you wouldn't expect to see in another ring. All of a sudden, you got Eddie Kingston there and all these folks coming in, doing, you know, one-offs and then maybe coming back later and just really helping solidify that, like, the TNT championship is not a mid-card championship, which is what everybody said. This is the working man's champion. This is the TV championship, right? Akin to the NWA TV championship or the Intercontinental championship. This is a match. This is a title you want to pay attention to. Loses it to Brody Lee. And were it not for Brody Lee's incredibly sad, tragic passing, would have probably been another headline feud. And it was for the time they feuded. But then he loses the TNT championship to Darby, if I'm not mistaken. And this is where the net really starts falling. So then he goes on to feud with QT Marshall. Now, nobody was ever going to believe QT Marshall was a main event guy, but hey, you know, like a member of the Nightmare Factory, turning, whatever. They were shoving down our throat that QT Marshall and Cody Rhodes are best friends, despite the fact that, like, I never knew that they knew one another and didn't even know who QT Marshall was. But whatever, hey, what do I know? And what happens? He beats QT Marshall immediately, so I guess feud over. And then, oh, no, but then he beats him again. Oh, no, and now he's feuding with his underlings. And then, Ryan, well, which underling did Cody Rhodes feud with?
Anthony Agogogo.
Feuds with Anthony Agogo. And Agogo's to put on some white robes and talk about America good while America burns around him. And this is where it just falls a fucking part. Now, first off, I saw somebody online say that Cody missed the crowds more than anyone else. And I think that that's probably really accurate. He's always been a good in-ring storyteller, and losing the crowds really hurt his ability to tell his stories. But he was starting to lose the net. And then this feud with QT shoves him down into the mid card. He does this harebrained thing with Anthony Agogo, which he'll try to tell you was like, oh, the weigh-in is what fucked it up. No. It's like your weird, I solved racism by
by granting this young gay black man a chance.
I solved racism by inseminating my black wife. That's what Cody Rhodes did. And then I'm going to put down the Nigerian immigrant who worked harder than me because he wasn't born to Dusty Rhodes. And then what do we go from there? Everything that Cody Rhodes has done since, no matter whether it was Malakai Black or anybody else, has just been mid card. Cody Rhodes screwed Cody Rhodes. That's what this is. It is the Cody Rhodes screw job, and he screwed himself. Cody Rhodes is responsible for not being treated like the star he thinks he is, because he wasn't anymore. And then he thought he was going to be on the same level as CM Punk returning for the first time in 7 years. Bryan Danielson, one of the most lauded wrestlers of its time. Who did he think he was? He isolates himself from the elite, isolates himself from the main event, and then wonders why he's not in the main event. You know what you did? You proved to Tony Khan that he didn't need you. That's what happened. I don't need him.
No, that's really the case. And if it wasn't for the Aleister Black feud, you know, he probably just would have been in another mid feud with somebody else, with Miro or somebody. So, yeah.
And you know what he did?
You're exactly right.
You know what else he did? Or rather, what he didn't do is he didn't become a heel. And he does not do the,
maybe I'm a heel, maybe I'm not, but I think I'm the good guy.
No. It was very clear. We doubted it. We doubted it at points. We thought, oh, maybe Cody's working us. Nope. Cody can't work us in this regard because Cody, ever the smart Cody,
I know what I'm doing, lean into it.
But Cody didn't actually want to go heel. Cody's promo, the last one he ends up cutting in AEW. What does he say?
When I said there is more than one wrestling family that's royalty, I meant all of us. And CM Punk did the pipe bomb, but I am the pipe bomb.
That's what he did. Because at the end of the day, Cody Rhodes is the hero of his own story. And Cody Rhodes can't fathom, well, why isn't everybody supporting me the same? Because you built the Codyverse, Cody. Because you made yourself uninteresting.
It's his show.
It's his show. You know what he did? He went up to Tony and he went, I want to tell my stories. Ryan, I want to tell my stories. Let me do my old wrestling. And then he thought he was going to get paid like a main event guy for putting on mid-card feuds. You put yourself in the mid-card. You helped elevate people out of the mid-card, but you kept yourself there. What, am I supposed to think he's some fucking martyr for that? You did it to yourself.
Okay, two scenarios here. Are we talking about this today if he went heel?
No, we're not, because he probably would have immediately proven himself to be a fucking top guy again. All he needed to do was go fucking beat up Hangman and be like, I made this company. I don't need to pay attention to this rule. Yeah. I'm going to go feud with Hangman. And everybody buys it. Everybody immediately goes, because you know why that would work? It would work because you would now think, fuck, would Cody book himself to win? I don't know. Would he? Now you can start working idiots like me who think they have you figured out. Do I understand Cody Rhodes? Is he a character? Is he not? And all you did is you showed me that I was right. I was right about you. Just like Jay White was right about Hangman Adam Page. Well, he wasn't actually. More like Kyle Hiroshi Tanahashi was right about Hangman Adam Page. But I was right. You buckled. And you sucked. And you sucked on the way out.
Are we also talking about this if he didn't get the neck tattoo?
No, I would hate him significantly less if he didn't get the neck tattoo. Absolutely.
Significantly less, yeah.
Significantly less. I can't take him seriously as a person. And like, I
just
know we're
imagine, not... Just imagine him walking backstage, wherever it is, WrestleMania, Backlash. Cody, great to have you back, son. I just... What the hell is that? What the hell is that? You know where you are? You're Giraffe Rhodes now. Giraffe Rhodes.
And so here's what it brings us to, Ryan. Cody screwed Cody. But hey, Cody wins out because Cody gets to go to WWE. Tony wouldn't give him the book anymore. So he's going to go to WWE and get his creative control. Here's the deal, my friend. You will be treated as a big deal. This is an undeniable coup for Vince McMahon. Handed it to him on a silver platter. He gets to steal away one of the co-founders of his biggest competition since WCW. He'll get to book him to say whatever the fuck he wants. Cody's probably going to want to say it himself because, I'll work all the smarks and I'm going to bring some AEW fans with me. And you're going to make WWE interesting for the first time. Or maybe our friend Travis will be right. And you'll walk in and Vince will go, you get to feud with Dolph Ziggler for 6 months. Who knows? But it'll probably be fine. I'm sure it'll work out for Cody. Because if there's one thing WWE is really good at, it's consistent creative. And they're really, they love when people grab that brass ring and tell their own stories. And you know what else they love is people who think they're bigger than the company. Good luck, Cody. I'll see you at Mania. And then I won't see you at all because I'm not paying attention.
Counterpoint. Counterpoint. He's going to face Roman Reigns.
Maybe. And maybe, you know, he will.
Probably going to be a good match. That's all I'll say.
Cody Rhodes.
Outside of that, though, we'll see. If he's going to still pull Cody shit, then he's screwed.
He won't be able to, because it won't be Cody's show anymore. It'll be Vince's. And hey, maybe it'll work out. Maybe it'll work out.
Maybe that's what he wants. Maybe he just wants to work those couple of days and then do, like, you know, I think he seriously wants to become an actor or anything like that. Like, you know, kind of like what John Cena is doing now, you know, just like an overall, like, showman.
But do you know what, you know what Cody's truest problem has always been as a character? What are the things you remember?
Not enough foresight, enough like realization, self-awareness.
What were the things that you remember that you love about Cody the best? All of the things that were great. Most of them were him as a heel. Do you know why that is? It's not because he can't cut a good babyface promo, because he sure as fuck can. It's not because he can't wrestle a good babyface match, because he sure as shit can. It's because Cody Rhodes, forget jokes about Papa McMahon, forget jokes about all of that. What Cody's doing, what Cody has done, especially since starting AEW, is Cody wanted everyone to view him the same way that they view his golden daddy. And do you know why they can't do that, Ryan? It's not because he's not as talented as Dusty. I would argue he's certainly outpaced Dusty's in-ring work. And to be frank, some of Cody's promos really come close to Hard Time. I forget which promo he cut where both of us were like, well, Jesus, fuck, that was a good promo. I think it might have been the one where he started stripping. I don't know, whatever.
I mean, even look at his match repertoire on his way out, you know, he didn't have to melt a table onto him. His match with Sammy was fucking amazing, dude.
Oh,
honestly.
Absolutely. But do you know,
you can't go out better than that.
No. So it's not for lack of talent, and it's not even for necessarily a lack of popularity, but do you know what it is? The big intangible between the American Dream Dusty Rhodes and the American Nightmare Cody Rhodes is that Cody wants you to believe. Like he wanted you to believe in the Anthony Ogogo feud, like he wanted you to believe against MJF, that Cody's one of you. Here's the deal. Cody's not one of you.
He's not.
Cody's never been one of you.
No.
Because
and
by
I think
the time
always...
by the time that Sorry. Cody was born, Dusty was making money. And Dustin was on his way to making money. Cody Rhodes is not the son of a plumber. He's the grandson of a plumber, which means he's a full generation removed from the type of struggle that so endeared Dusty to the blue collar workers that routinely checked in to Southern Wrestling. The NWA spoke to the blue collar. Here's the reality, Cody. You're not Dusty. You're Ric Flair. That's who you are.
He is. But the problem is that, you know, people believe Dusty because they saw himself in it. You know, as we talked about many times, he was this big, overweight, blue-collar guy that's going to beat up this big, rich Southern boy, and he's going to beat him up good. Cody never had that character to build off of.
No.
No. And
no.
It's hard to, because he's a fucking super-cut, blonde-haired, has it all.
He's an extremely attractive, wealthy white man born into a dynasty, one of the biggest families in the history of wrestling, one of the most integral families to wrestling. And does he help restore honor to the Rhodes name? If you like want to say that Dustin wasn't successful as Gold Dustin, sure, whatever. But like, Cody is nothing like the people that his father tried to appeal to. And that's fine. Nobody needs Cody to try and convince us he's something he's not. He doesn't have to be ashamed about coming from money. He doesn't have to be ashamed about being attractive or being good at wrestling or any of that. but he can't sell me on the idea that I understand struggle like all the rest of you. You're not like your crowd. You can't be. If you're going to be a face, that can't be your avenue. And it was never more clear than cutting a promo against a black immigrant saying that you understand racism because your daughter will be black and therefore, but also America's good while the country burns around you in the middle of a pandemic and fucking fascists trying to take over the government. And like it was never more clear that Cody didn't lose it. Cody never had it. Cody never understood what connected him to the audience. He never got it. And when the crowds turned on him, that's why he couldn't understand it. But I'm you guys. I gave you what you wanted. You're delusional, but you're not a delusional heel. You're just a delusional face. And now I don't know if that's Cody Rhodes the person or Cody Rhodes the character. And if you want to say I got work, that's great. But you know what? The crowds turned on you and now you're going to be in WWE. So I don't know who's right.
Yeah, my last point on this would be that, you know, Cody had an avenue to have that seat at the table in AEW. I don't think he necessarily put in the work to get there. And not saying he was undeserving of it, but I think he would have benefited a little more. Because it kind of felt like he just tagged along for the ride and did a hot minute in, you know, he was the number one guy at the time with the chip on his shoulder from WWE. They needed him. You know, let's be honest. They needed him as a part of the circle, but he didn't put in the work like the others did. You know, he probably would have benefited a little better from more time in New Japan for certain. Whether it was a match with Naito, Bushi, Tanahashi, especially, I think he, you know, if he saw, like, you know, I really have to prove myself. This isn't like, oh, I'm WWE. I'm good to go. Like, you have to fucking bleed in multiple rings across the world before you get to this position. So I think that hurt him a little bit as well. But man's going to get paid, so who the fuck are we?
Here's what it boils down to. Like you said, it's been 45 minutes. I've gotten my licks in. I wish Cody Rhodes, the person, the father, the human being, nothing but the best. I joke. I have my opinions, but I don't know this man. I don't want him to fail. He's got a family. I don't think everybody hates him. I don't know him. I bet if I knew him, I'd probably love him. That's probably the reality. I'm gonna miss being able to hate him so voraciously, because the God's honest truth is when he shows up in WWE, I'll be paying attention. I'm gonna watch what happens, and then I'm gonna not. Because I just don't like Cody enough to care. And I'm not watching WWE because of Cody. But hey, he surprised everyone once. Who's to say he doesn't do it again? He's going to get paid. And for better, you know, for better or for worse, and despite all this, like we said in the beginning, you know, when we were softening him up before we took a sledgehammer to him, Cody Rhodes is absolutely one of the most transformative figures in modern wrestling. Nobody has made this form of an impact. He couldn't have done it himself. So, like, don't let that be the narrative that Cody did this by himself. He did not. Without the Bucks, this doesn't happen. Without Dave Meltzer being a giant Bucks and Omega stan, this doesn't happen. Without Cody being a Rhodes, this doesn't happen. Point being, he will go down as one of the most transformative figures in wrestling and creates one of the truly most shocking moments of recent wrestling development, which is what brings me to the shorter second part of this, which is I want to talk about not necessarily shocking departures, but like some of the most shocking arrivals and departures of wrestling, of wrestlers from other promotions that felt like true landscape shifting events. To start, right? And I'm going to try to not be retrospective about this because, for example, it'd be very easy to say, I guess we have to be a little retrospective because we are being retrospective with Cody. But like, I'm not going to talk about like stunning Steve Austin leaving WCW and going to WWF because that's like not fair. That's not going to count. But like, to start. And I think we touched on this a little bit, maybe a while ago, Hulk Hogan leaving the AWA, right? Now, Hulk Hogan is, of course, one of the most transformative figures in all of wrestling. It is arguable that no wrestler was ever as big or ever will be as big as Hulk Hogan, with the maybe exception of like The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, or maybe back in the day, someone like Lou Thesz or Bruno Sammartino, et cetera, et cetera. But Hulk Hogan, for a very long time and for quite a few generations, was the guy associated with wrestling. Now, you might imagine that he got his start in WWF or WWWF, right? You know, it would make sense. You've known him since the early 80s. He was at WrestleMania 1. But he didn't get his start there per se. He started there in 79 after he was training, but he's only there for like a year. He is also already losing his name. He is losing his hair. But this is when Terry Bollea became Hulk Hogan, which is because Vince McMahon wanted to use an Irish name and he wanted to dye his hair red. And that didn't happen.
Wait, is that true?
That's true.
Oh, shit. I didn't know that. That's fucking hilarious.
That is true. But he didn't stay there for that long. He started out as a heel. He was with Classy Freddie Blassie, who we had given quite a bit of talking about in our shtick about NWA, known as one of the true great managers and original heels of professional wrestling. But after there, where he really builds up his star is in New Japan and AWA. AWA, for anybody that doesn't remember, is Vern Gagne's promotion that he starts in the wake of his split with the NWA. And this was after like a huge split in the like 50s. I think he like won the title, but then they didn't want him to win the title, and it became a whole thing. So eventually he starts the AWA. The AWA was like the first true competitor to NWA at the time, to the National Wrestling Alliance. So it is like one of the biggest American promotions that is not a territory. But Hogan became a fan favorite at the end of 1981. And then it's been documented that Vern, he wasn't quite sold on Hogan as like the company guy. He just wasn't sure about it. And that proved to be one of the biggest mistakes, maybe the biggest mistake of Vern Gagne's career, or of the AWA's career, of its life. Because then Hogan goes WWF in 83, comes back as like an established heavyweight, an established fan favorite. And, well, I don't got to tell you what happens next. Hulkamania happens next. Hulk Hogan becomes arguably the biggest wrestler of all time. Blah, 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 blah. So, like, I use him as a jumping off point because it's kind of one of those things. Like, you know, like when Vince released Cody Rhodes in 2016, mm-hmm. probably didn't think anything of it. And it's not even to say that necessarily Vince didn't see the talent, because I'm sure he did. Like Cody, I think it'd be hard pressed to say Cody was not booked well during his time with WWE. Like he just was not. He was a mid-carder. He's a tag guy. He's a mid-carder. And that was a little bit maybe at the time where they saw him. That's where they saw him. That's just where he was. He wasn't as refined a promo, blah, blah, blah.
We didn't see him do that.
Nobody did. Like, Stardust was fun. And then, like, dashing Cody Rhodes in the face. Like, all of that was fun. I don't think mm-hmm. anybody probably hated Cody. But, yeah, I think he just didn't care. I think you looked at him the same way that you looked at, what was the younger DiBiase's name? Was it Mike?
Ted Jr.
Oh, Ted Jr., yeah. Probably looked at him in the same way. Like, oh, that's cool. Like, he famous, you know, wrestling kid. But
he was certainly better than Ted.
He was better than Ted, but he was not Randy.
Well, exactly. And that was the point I was thinking about all week. Amongst that class, that generation of WWE talent, you know, Randy's class, you know, he was lackluster. At the same token, though, Cody never really got the opportunities to, you know, become who he is
no,
now.
No, he didn't get Randy's opportunities. Randy came in and like immediately gets to be like Evolution, and he gets his own faction and gets hotshotted. And Cody never got that same respect. I would argue Randy came in probably a little better than Cody. But, yeah, you know, that's besides the point. But point being, I use Hogan as a jumping off point because, agree or disagree, I would say that it's, I would feel Vince was probably hard pressed to view releasing Cody Rhodes as destructive as it turned out to be. And I think the same goes for Vern Gagne and Hogan, where Hogan was like a clear, like fan favorite. So he's probably like more popular than Cody, but this was early on in his career. And he like worked in Japan. He works in America. I don't think Vern Gagne could have anticipated Hulkamania. I don't think he could have anticipated Hulk Hogan literally being the biggest wrestler of that generation, you know?
Yes and no. I think he knew that Hulk was going to be an absolute superstar. Right. No, he didn't expect him to be the immortal character that he is today.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not you want to believe the story about him paying Iron Sheik to break his leg, which might be true, you know, just with all this old Cardi shit. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, definitely. And I, like I said, there's no way in hell that Vince saw the next 5 years after Cody was released. It gets me thinking to the other debuts, because, you know, we could talk about Nash and Scott Hall.
Well, yeah,
ACW.
Of course, the Outsiders is like a common one.
Right. We could talk about Y2J showing up. I want to talk about the Radicals showing up.
Ah, okay.
Because the Radicals really opened up the door. Because, like, obviously, you know, we expected Goldberg supposedly to show up. You know, the Big Show came through, which was huge. But the Radicals really opened up the door to, like, that mid-card coming through to the division. And it made you realize, like, how much they wasted these guys in WCW. And no disrespect to Saturn and Malenko. You know, legends in their own right, especially Malenko. But, man, like, Chris Benoit and Guerrero, Stevie Richards and Eddie Guerrero were...
Yeah, Dr. Death Steve Williams. That's who you mean.
Right, exactly. Yeah, okay. That they just became titans in the company. And it was like they were there the entire time. You know what I mean? And, again, when Eddie Guerrero left WCW, now I was 9 at the time. When he ten when he showed up at the time, you know, I knew Eddie Guerrero was awesome. Do you think that, you know, obviously with all WCW's faults, did they expect Eddie to get to the level that he was? You know, did they expect Stevie Richards to get to the triple threat match of WrestleMania 20 and, you know, just be this absolute fucking menacing force?
Now, this would
future
be
future excluded.
This would be my yes and no, because I definitely think when it comes to Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn, you could probably look at them and acknowledge, especially in Malenko's case, the clear talent.
Deal.
The clear talent.
Yeah.
Benoit, you could maybe argue like, they miss. I feel WCW 100% missed the mark with Eddie. Like,
right.
Because they looked at him. WCW booked cruiserweights better than any other promotion in America at that time. Of course, that was like kind of their bread and butter. But Eddie was never viewed as the absolute megastar that I think he was clearly destined to be. Because even like, let's say it's the early 80s, right? Hogan, even by those standards, was never known as a great worker. Mm-hmm. Charismatic, yes, but like kind of goofy. But a fan favorite, nonetheless. You loved him. You loved the physique, or the whole community, whatever. Eddie, they should have been able to immediately notice not just how Eddie connected to the crowd, how well he worked as a heel, how good he was in the ring, how charismatic he was. That is 100% like you gifted Eddie Guerrero to your biggest competition and like, did that sink you? No. But like, that's a good example of like, because we spoke about this in our big thing about WCW, like, it was that era because they went over in like, what was it, like 90 it was after Halloween. It was 2000. Okay, so it was at the end of WCW, but like by that point WCW had let the junior heavyweights, the younger talent, suffer at the hands of NWO. By this point was way past its peak, and no amount of that Wolfpack nonsense was going to save it. Eddie, you gifted to the competition. You might have been on a sinking ship already, but like you threw a life raft to another ship.
You threw probably the guy who could have saved the company, excluded from, you know, obviously WCW being sold, but in a timeline where WCW could have been salvageable,
gets a chance. Yeah, you build
you
around somebody like
the
Eddie.
Two guys that could have been, you know, the absolute pillars of, you know, the new gen of WCW.
Yeah,
but we talk about the mirroring comparisons here, and I'm not comparing Guerrero to Cody, but Guerrero born out of a legacy. You know, his dad is an absolute legend in regards to Mexican wrestling, you know, and it was like a ready-made thing with Eddie, where, like, you perfect example, you gifted him. You had Benoit, who was Dynamite Kid Jr., who, you know, was born out of the dungeon, who, you know, came, took over Japan as Pegasus Kid. You know, absolutely, they could have saved WCW. And they let him go for peanuts, you know?
Yeah, dimes on a dollar, for sure. Pennies on a dollar, whatever. Fucking, you know what I'm saying.
It's dimes with the inflation now. So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, quarters, if you will.
Thanks, Biden.
We try not to get political on this podcast, Ryan. Very naughty.
All right.
No. This is a wrestling podcast. Wrestling has never had anything to do with politics. And you are ruining my story time with your politics. My last example, and one that, you know, so if we're talking about the conspiracy that, like, again, like, is fun, like, this isn't what Cody did intentionally, but inadvertently. You know what Cody, they're very different, but you know what this kind of makes me think of is it makes me think of Ric Flair feeling strong-armed out of NWA and then being like, okay, I'm going to go steal the belt, go to WWF, win the Royal Rumble at number three, right? He won it. He entered at three, won at three, winning the WWF championship, and then immediately calling that the biggest belt. And then using his leverage over that time to go back and like be the guy in WCW.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously these are very different in that when Ric Flair goes to WWF in 1991, has already been the guy in NWA for like, I don't know, 13 years, some shit like that, longer, 17 years. Like, Ric Flair has been the guy for a very long time in NWA. By this point, he's got to have been NWA champion at least like 5-6 times. He has had like his classics with Sting and Steamboat and, you know, all that shit, whatever. But
he could have retired at that point and still be
the
man he is
today. Would have been
today.
Fine. But regardless, right. Regardless of that, Jim Herd in WCW, right? Because by this point, NWA has really been consolidated into Jim Crockett. And then by 91, Jim Crockett has now been eaten alive by WCW, and Jim Herd is the guy there. Jim Herd doesn't want to pay Ric Flair. Ric Flair, right? You talk about Hogan being the guy. Well, like, it was Hogan and Flair. And that was why it was so crazy that that they never put them together, right?
We got to pay the ding dongs, brother.
Ding dongs. So like, yes, we spoke about this, but Jim Herd was not good at his job as president of WCW. He didn't really understand the wrestling business. He had the ding dongs, and he wanted Ric Flair to shave his luscious blonde locks and change his whole shit, wear a diamond earring, and go by the name Spartacus, which is as funny as Steve Austin needing to be Chili McCool. Still funny. And so Ric Flair being the biggest, I wonder, like, in that point in time, who would you call would you call Rick the biggest in the world by this point? I mean, Sting by this point is huge and Hogan's huge, but Rick
if Hogan's won Flair's too, and
yeah,
really 1B. Because
the only other person that I can immediately think of, like the Horsemen in general, because this is after the Horsemen, so they're the only other person that really comes to mind is like Dusty, like maybe, but I feel like as big a draw as Dusty was, I feel like he wasn't Ric Flair.
But you know, Ric Flair and Dusty had the benefit, like Hulk Hogan was centralized to the Northeast, New York City, WWF.
Very true. Very true.
Ric Flair and Dusty were known all across the country because they worked every single federation.
You know, great point, because Hogan goes to WWF and then WWF's not part of the territory. So huge deal because WWF is a huge deal. But yeah, you're right. They're working every territory.
And Rick has the rare example, if you want to continue this, where you, a great point, the famous story of him driving around whatever arena it was in. With Vince McMahon. I'm not sure if this is same time as when he came in the Rumble or if this is after. It might have been after. But Ric Flair doesn't get what he wants from Jim Herd, gets into the Rumble, wins it completely over. Again, it was like Ric Flair was there the entire time. Goes back to WCW for that leverage. Then uses that leverage in WCW to go back to WWF. Not that he really had much of a choice at this point, but you know, he could have took the way of Sting and not gone to WWF. But pretty much set himself up for like the greatest retirement run of all time over the next the next like 7 years from when he showed up after Survivor Series up until his last match against Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. You know, so like it's a rare like example of like, you know, somebody working the system like three times over. Not many people could say that.
Yeah, and this is why. Like, if you might compare Hulk to, like, who could have really known he was going to become this big a deal, Rick is who Cody reminds me of in the playbook of, like, oh, you don't think I'm good enough? Okay, I'm going to go be a megastar. Oh, now you think I don't deserve to be a top guy? Now I'm going to go back as a megastar and get treated like I should. And what happens to Cody's career from here? Anybody's guess. But I feel like Cody and Rick probably have similar business minds. Big difference is Ric Flair is like a notorious piece of shit who only ever has looked out for himself. And I don't feel that's probably Cody's deal. But regardless, it's undeniable that like that's what this makes me think of. You don't think I'm worth it? You think I'm like not as big as CM Punk? You think I'm not as big as Bryan Danielson when I helped you build this fucking company, which that's what Ric Flair did for Jim Crockett. That's what Ric Flair did for 80s NWA and WCW. Built that shit. That's my company. That's me and the Horsemen and Sting and Dusty. We built that. You don't think I'm worth it? I'm going to go be a top guy over at WWF right now, immediately. And then leverages that and goes right back to WCW, like you said. So that's, I feel like that is something I think of as well. Just the ability to leverage the undeniable star power, right? Because I joke, but like I said, like the first year of AEW, I was 100% willing to buy Cody as like a top guy. I was like, yeah, this makes sense. He seems like a complete package. So that would be my last example. Do you have any other person that comes to mind for you that you think of?
Mick Foley, 100%.
Okay. Which version of Foley?
Mick Foley when he first showed up as Mankind. Where I think it's funny.
Oh, when he like leaves WCW.
He left WCW as Cactus Jack and went to WWF as Mankind.
Okay.
I don't think either company saw him getting to the point where he was.
No, that's why Tony Schiavone makes his famous comment. Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, obviously he was given the opportunity because, you know, somebody had the foresight to recognize that, you know, he was going to be a fucking over his fuck champion. But, you know, the classic story, it's just like, I don't like your face, put on a mask. So, you know, it goes to show, like, did WWF at the time even have that knowledge to see? Because he debuted in a match against Bob Holly. So, I mean, like, you know. It's kind of weird saying that for Mick Foley, where, like, you know, he should have came in and been an absolute legend, which he was at the end of the day. But two other examples I want to give where it should have worked out as well was Booker T. You know, I helped build this goddamn mid-card, five-time WCW champion. Should have been over as fucking WWF. We all know what happened there.
I mean, truly was over as fuck. Right. But yeah, never
was
got
over as fucking WWF as well. But this
well, that's
never
what I'm
was,
saying. Yeah,
was,
huge in WCW. Should have been bigger in WWF. 100%. Right. Yeah, should have worked out, but didn't.
Taz is also another guy that came to mind, because obviously you could say Rob Van Dam holds that torch, where, you know, he was the face of ECW, came over, became an absolute legend in WWE. Taz should have been that person as well, especially with the high striker, with the style that we see today in wrestling. You know, Taz is one of the forefathers of that, and should have absolutely gone on a more deeper run than outside that one night in Madison Square Garden at Royal Rumble 2000. Go back and watch that video, man. He was just over as fuck. And yeah, you know, you want to say like, oh, the New York crowd knew who he was. Nah, bullshit, dude. Like, if you given that man a run, the opportunity, he could have been like, and you know, I don't know what his body would have held up to a certain point, because I think that's really what it came down to, is that, you know, it's just, he couldn't really hack it anymore. But man, no doubt in my mind, he would have had the same output as Angle did in the early 2000s with some of his matches. And, you know, I think we were robbed of some opportunities just because of that, because he didn't debut in the correct way, whatever bullshit it was. But, you know, who knows? But those are two examples that came to mind where it should have worked out, but it didn't.
So Taz's big issue in WWF, it was like his neck, right?
It was his neck. Oh, what ultimately did him in? Yeah,
well,
it was
well,
his
neck. I'm thinking of, because he leaves ECW as one of the founders, not found, but like one of the biggest guys to come out of ECW. And like, right, you said, like somebody whose style is so recognizable, and it not just for like what made Taz so cool was his brutality didn't need to rely on blood and spikes like so many other people
power
in ECW.
Like
it's just fucking slams and suplexes and holds, and that's what made Taz looked brutal, because his shit was brutal. But like, Taz also didn't hurt people. Taz was like a very safe worker who, yep, made everything look incredibly painful. But does he not go over in WWF because of neck issues, or do they just not pull the trigger because they kind of viewed ECW as a joke?
No, not at all. And, you know, this has come up. I think Vince was a secret funder of ECW. I don't think he enjoyed the raunchiness and all the other, you know, shit that came out of ECW. But I think Vince, you know, legitimately had and wanted to have a working relationship with ECW, because, you know, they just went hand in hand during that era. I think what did Taz in was just his size, you know, because obviously me and you, if we were bookers in WWF circa 2000, we would have gave, you know, the go ahead and the torch to Taz. But like, at the end of the day, when he's in the ring with, you know, I want to look up Taz's height. I want to say he's like, it might be a case where we think
maybe
Taz
he's
like
is 5'4",
like 5'6", but he's really like as tall as I am. But, you know,
his
just compared
build
to
height is 5'9".
Okay, so he's probably like 5'8", 5'9". But, you know, when you put him up in the ring with Undertaker and Kane and Triple H, who, you know, that's what WWE built off their roster.
5'6" is what he actually was.
Okay.
Like.
So, yeah, even, you know, 6'4", 6'5", like, he was never going to get that chance against guys like that. Obviously, again, we don't doubt his ability to do it, but I think just from a standpoint, it was just like, yeah, this isn't really going to work for us.
I'm reading here that apparently when he feuded with Triple H, that Vince regretted booking Taz to lose to Triple H. So
I believe that.
You're probably, I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, I'm not, we joke about Vince all the time, and I've got no love for a shitty billionaire, but like, nobody knows Vince, and you're right. Like, I feel like he never actually took ECW as seriously as he did WCW, but you're right. He probably liked it more than WCW, because like, it wasn't competition. So he probably could just enjoy it for what it was. And, you know, he did let them come on and shit talk immediately. So yeah, maybe Taz is a regret of his, and then injuries just forced him out. But so it all begs the question, who does Cody, what is Cody's legacy become from here? To be frank, Cody could retire right now and be legendary, but Cody's not done wrestling. So what becomes Cody's legacy? He's a despite the shit he puts his body through, Cody's a pretty safe worker. He doesn't hurt people. He takes the bumps he wants to take. He tries, you know, I don't think you're going to see him through too many flaming tables at this point, especially if he goes back to WWE. You're not going to see anything like that. Does Cody become Ric Flair and become a main event guy in WWE for the rest of his career and win the championships he felt he should have deserved all along and be remembered as one of the most influential wrestlers of his generation? Does he never get bigger than where he is now and be remembered as somebody who was influential but didn't end his career on the right note? Does he wind up more like somebody like Taz, who got to that level somewhere else but could never hack it on the biggest stage for one reason or another? Only time will tell. My money is I don't feel like you're going to see a big injury from him just based off his style. Of course, you never know. It's a dangerous business. It doesn't take much. For all the jokes about WWE booking, even Vince, at this stage of the game, feeling as confident as he does about WWE and like nobody's bigger than the brand, I refuse to believe that that WWE would not value Cody as somebody that like, oh, we gotta, like, this guy's gotta be put to the top. He's good enough. He talks well enough. He's a crossover star. We're getting the competition's co-founder. I don't expect him to be embarrassed in the mid-card. I don't expect him to get buried. I don't expect him to get publicly humiliated. I think if they landed Cody, there were obviously promises made about creative control or about what our plans are for you. And does that change? Of course, it's WWE. But if you spurn Cody again, I don't, you know, it, like, what does that do? So I'm more likely to believe that if he does ultimately go to WWE, when, that he will be a star like he thinks he should have been.
The outliers for this scenario are Bobby and Drew. And look what happened to them in the last couple of years. So there's no doubt in my mind that Cody's going to be instantly top five as soon as he walks in the door.
Yep. And yep. Then it's just...
And listen, he deserves it.
He does. Give him his flowers.
He did what he needed to do after he left. Again, you know, I think this was his idea all along. It was just the train ride when it left the station of Greenwich, Connecticut, went way further than he expected it to. And he is going back in with full negotiation power and pretty much can get whatever he wants. So it's a rare situation. Not many guys in the wrestling business can do that.
No. It's not something even his dad could do. And he's significantly younger. It's still in his prime. I will put all of the jokes and the ha-has and the critiques aside. And I will say, wrestling fans absolutely owe Cody Rhodes a debt of gratitude for helping AEW come to fruition. The first year of AEW was incredibly exciting. It was full of missteps, but it was incredibly exciting. I think overall, I like Tony better as a booker than everybody booking their own shit. But criticisms about AEW aside, like, it doesn't exist without Cody. I don't think the Bucks can just do it on their own. And wrestling is better because Cody Rhodes gambled on himself. So regardless of what I think about his character, regardless of what I think about how big of a star he is, the reality is wrestling now has been left in a better place because Cody Rhodes bet on himself and got in with the right people to create a situation where this can happen. And it does hurt AEW and it does suck and it will be weird, but AEW will be fine because he has left a lasting legacy and built a company that even if it folded tomorrow, anybody would be incredibly proud of. And so for that, my hat's off to Cody Rhodes. With that said, go fuck yourself, you stupid piece of shit idiot. I hate you.
Also, some of the guys in the back right now have to breathe a sigh of relief because he freed up the opportunity for some of those guys to stay. So
that is a lot of time, too, that is suddenly opened up. Not having Cody Rhodes on your weekly show means you now have 20, 25 minutes every week that now goes to somebody else. And that means that it's time for people to step up. And now we get to see, all right, what do? Who fills that gap? Because at the end of the day, Ryan, Cody was my favorite mid-carder. And so, as we wrap up this glorious, transcendent celebration of just pure wrestling expertise and knowledge, so smart are we. Such good mensches are we.
Foresight.
But no foreskin, because we are mensches. a legend killer for us.
Check your phone, my friend.
I haven't looked yet. Is it Cody?
No.
Okay.
You've been on a good streak recently, so I think you'll get this one as well.
Actually, I'm more curious as to who this person is twisting. Almost looks like Big Show. Okay. Can I guess who that is? Ooh, that's a little tough. It's a little tough. Okay. I don't immediately have it. Let's do a little bit of stuff here. Okay. What era am I looking at? Am I looking at the 80s or 90s?
Yeah. Mid to late 80s.
Mid to late 80s, early on in a lad's career. All right. Let's do a little bit of, what does this look like to me? Okay, Ryan, I request hint number one.
He fits the topic that we discussed today. Maybe not at the grander scale, but definitely an individual worth being talked about.
Like the general topic of people leaving a promotion and going somewhere else to become bigger?
Correct.
Well, did he leave like a shitty indie company, or did he leave like a established company to then be bigger?
Established.
Hmm. Is it somebody I'm not going to be able to guess? Like,
no.
Fucking Davey Richards or some shit.
He left his respective company to become big, left that company, came back in a different way, and is now probably more over because of it.
Is that, that's not Drew, is it?
It's not Drew.
Is it Drew's era or older?
Older.
Older.
You are in the correct hemisphere.
Like geography hemisphere or like?
Yes.
That's not helpful. So I'm in America. That's helpful.
No, you're not. Where's Drew from?
Oh, Scotland. Is not Roddy.
Nope.
The fuck else is Scottish? Well, maybe not necessarily Scottish. You can... Regal?
That's Regal, baby.
Okay. Wow. Wiry lad. Wiry lad. Do you know who he's wrestling there? Do you see it?
I don't. It's
like
some guy in Britain.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure like over there, he's like, you know, one of the biggest British stars of all time. But, you know, we don't know who he is.
Now that I got it, it makes total sense.
Look at that face.
Look at
that glare.
Yeah.
Steven Regal.
William Steven Regal.
Started up as an upshot, you know, classic smug British character in WCW. One of the most we talked about Regal 100 times, but one of the most underrated workers in WWE. I implore you to watch the match against Goldberg where Regal was fed to just be
just
another number.
Just worked him to death.
Just fed to him to be another number on his undefeated streak, and Regal made him fucking
shit. Not Lord William Regal. Regal would absolutely, I feel like you could very comfortably put him in the same place of what ifs as Taz and who was the other person that you had said?
Booker T.
And Booker T, yeah. Very much the same place where the only thing that stopped William Regal from being the megastar was substance use, was his, was inner demons. Regal was Dean Malenko's technique mixed with like Triple H's arrogance and like Shawn Michaels' ability to cut a promo. Just like that's a guy that made you fucking hate him. You know what? Actually, no, no, no. Scrap all of that. You know who William Regal is? William Regal is Kurt Angle if painkillers won out before he became who he was. William Regal was a guy that talked. He could be goofy. He could be deadly serious. He was talented as fuck. But unlike Kurt, he could not overcome that to be the superstar he should have been.
Dude, you know, people say like Neil Young is like the godfather of grunge. Stephen Regal is the godfather of British strong style.
Oh, and yes.
If he was just in a better place in his life, circa 2005, where he ended Raw early, dude, he was gonna be over as fuck. He was gonna get that opportunity. We all know what happened, unfortunately. But maybe that happening to him allowed him to be the man that he is today. And, you know, just this absolute beloved character, the head, if not for Triple H, the second most recognizable face in NXT.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he still had it at the beginning of it. His match with Cesaro is amazing. Yeah. His match with Daniel Bryan was great.
That was so his retirement match, right? The one with Daniel Bryan? Because wasn't it when he...
The one with Cesaro, I think, is more regarded as
his
retirement
because
match.
When he wrestled Daniel Bryan, wasn't he still Bryan Danielson? Wasn't it like when he just showed up or some shit?
No, I think it was before the... it was before Daniel Bryan Yes Movement, but it
yeah,
was...
Yeah, you're right.
He was still around. He was still.
You're right.
Daniel
Bryan. Cesaro was like the beginning of the black and gold era, and like
right, exactly.
When he was wrapping up. Yeah, and like you said, thankfully, Regal is has been able to turn himself around to become one of the most beloved wrestlers in history, and somebody whose knowledge of wrestling benefits any company he goes to. You'd love to see Regal in AEW just because there's so many young workers there that it would just be such a huge benefit to them. But frankly, all I really hope for Regal is that he goes somewhere where he is allowed to continue to shape the young minds and techniques of wrestlers to come. I want that style of British catch as catch can to continue. British strong style is a great. I love it. It should continue. So I just hope he goes somewhere good. So very good. Very good. Took me a little bit, but got it. Still doing pretty good right now, Ryan. Doing pretty good.
Still on a streak.
Still on a streak, baby. So as we begin to wrap up, Ryan, what have you been listening to?
I've been checking out the new Beach House album.
Oh, Beach House has a new album?
Beach House has a new album.
Well, that's fun.
The Lords of Dream Pop. Was never really a huge fan of them up until a couple of years ago when I started to get into them when I was in the post-emo phase of my life.
Depression Cherry is a fun album.
Depression Cherry, A Teen Dream. Just great, absolute albums. Like, if you just have a very forlorn and depressing day, just put on your headphones and just escape into their world of lush synth pop. It's really great. The first thing I thought about listening to this new album was like, wow, this sounds like pre Dark Side of the Moon era Pink Floyd.
Which is
hard to replicate in this day and age, but like, you know, like I just as a young lad, like, you know, getting lost in it, like, you know, definitely just a well crafted, well thought out piece of art, you know, aside from music. So really getting into them, you know, if anything, like, you know, like My Bloody Valentine or like, you know, Slow Dive, if that's really your cup of tea and you haven't really checked out Beach House, I would recommend that you do.
Cool. I'm going to check that out as soon as I get my fucking headphones back. Anything else we're listening to?
At the moment, no. Nothing really... nothing aside from the norms, but that was really something new I want to bring up.
I will... Well, you know what? Do I have anything new and interesting? I know the album I want to talk about, but why don't we just do a quick perusal of the old Spotify to see if there's anything vaguely more interesting. I will say Wilhelm Scream has a new album coming out very soon. What is it called? Oh, fuck me. I don't know what this... Delusion? I think it might be called Delusion. I think it's set to come out in April. They've released 3 songs off of this so far. So for those who do not know a Wilhelm Scream, they are the greatest punk band in existence. They are heavy, melodic, technical, just the fucking the most talented punk shit you're ever going to listen to. Probably my favorite band right now for a while have been. Their last album, Party Crasher, came out in 2013. So we're talking a good fucking 9 years since their last shit came out. And we've released 3 songs so far. Figure Eight's in My Head, kind of a slower melodic jam. Apocalypse Porn, one of their more straightforward political songs, very techie. And Be One to Know One, which is one of the best songs I've heard made in a very long time. I've listened to it like 100 times. If you like fast, if you like heavy, if you like melodic, if you like just fucking well-written, techie, incredibly impressive music, a Wilhelm Scream is the band you want to listen to. So that comes out in April. They were supposed to play in March. That got delayed to September. I got tickets for that, but very much looking forward to that album coming out. And as for a proper album, I've been doing a lot of like Blink-182 listening. So I'm going to shout out what I believe to be one of the most underrated albums of the 2000s, and that is Plus 44's When Your Heart Stops Beating.
Very cool. I was not a Angels and Airwaves guy. I was a Plus 44 guy.
Yeah, Plus 44, the biggest tragedy is that they only made one album. Hello, Mercury. Are we going to be quiet for the last few minutes? Are we not sure? Okay, we'll figure it out. When Your Heart Stops Beating came out in 2006. So we're talking a few years after the self-titled and after the great demise of Blink-182. And this is just like Mark Hoppus's like best writing. It's just a head to toe. It's so good. It's electronic. It's dark. It's everything that the self-titled Blink album was, just like amplified. It was all, you know, it was none of the new wave influence that Tom DeLonge brought in, you know, and the Cure influence. This was pure, straightforward, like dark electronic punk. And it's so good. I really feel like it's one of the most underrated albums of the 2000s. It's some of my favorite shit. And that era of Mark's writing from like 2004 on, I've just loved. I loved Neighborhoods. I loved tracks like Here's Your Letter on Blink self-titled. But just, yeah, like you said, like I was not a big Angels and Airwaves guy. I like them more now that I like have developed a little bit more of a palette. But I was always a Plus 44 guy. And if that's not an album you've checked out, like you say, if you're in the mood for Beach House, right, and that's where you're in, go listen to Plus 44. You'll jump off a bridge right after.
You know, I guess it's because Mark is such a humble guy where he just always had Blink-182 in his purview and just really wanted to do that. I was really surprised that Plus 44 never, and I don't know what happened, but I mean, I'm really surprised Plus 44 they're not revered as, I guess because like Angels and Airwaves had a more grandiose approach to their project. But like, you know, Plus 44 was fucking awesome, man. I really enjoyed that shit. And Plus obviously, 40- like, you know, the Chad Boxcar Racer versus the Virgin Plus 44.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Plus 44 was Mark's fuck you response to Boxcar Racer, right down to getting Travis on it as well. Travis is just like, hey, man, I just want to play drums. And Mark and Tom are like, fuck you. No, fuck you. Like, no, it isn't, is the most pointed breakup song of all time. And it's about Blink-182.
But you know what's funny?
Let's
like,
slit our wrists and burn down something beautiful. Love it. Love the melodrama.
I never really appreciated self-title with Blink-182.
Neither did I, until I was older.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously the adage goes, but like, you know, till I listened to The Cure and I was like, oh, Blink-182 was just The Cure on this album. And obviously it makes sense because Robert Smith was on it and presumably Ghost wrote a couple of things with them. But
such
like,
an excellent call. The minute you can listen to Disintegration and get it, you can go get Blink-182 self-titled. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. And like, it helped me appreciate it a lot more because like, you know, I guess the talk of the time was like sellout and like, you know, all that shit, but nah, man, it's a great album. And because I was able to, have the benefit of getting into The Cure and, you know, it really made me appreciate that era of Blink. And who knows what will happen down the road, but, you know, I do like Matt Skiba and Blink-182, though.
You know, my issue is not with Skiba, but Neighborhoods is probably my favorite Blink album.
That's funny, too. And, like, the diehard Blink, the Blinkheads, the diehard Blink fans that I know.
The Blinkers.
The Blinkers, they really love Neighborhoods, dude.
It's and so you are good.
You are not the first person to tell me that Neighborhoods is their favorite album.
It works so well because like California was the album that Blink probably should have put out in between Take Off Your Pants and Jacket and the self-titled. So it's an album that's like 20 years out of time. Mm-hmm. But Neighborhoods, like, and Tom did an interview back in November, like after Mark went into full remission for his cancer, which thank goodness, you know, said like, yeah, you know, I'd be down. It just, it, you know, I don't know what people are thinking, but I'd be down. I think the other guys are down. So
I think that's a safe bet.
And I would love to keep Skiba in the band. I think Skiba's voice fits really well. I think that he's a very good guitar player. He's a great songwriter. If he goes back to Alkaline Trio, great. But like, I'd be very interested.
Is he not in Alkaline Trio?
Well, like he is, but I don't know. It's also unclear like what his deal is with Blink because like the song that they put out during quarantine that I think might have been called Quarantine, like he wasn't in the video, so I don't know. I don't really know what's happening, but
I think Tom needed a break, and also like, you know, I think they all needed a break from each other, but like at the same time, I don't think, like, obviously Tom can just walk back in whatever he wants, but he also wanted, like, you know, I don't know what the relationship is between them, but I think he also wanted that to like flesh out a little bit before he's just like, okay, I'm back, like, you know what I mean,
because what happened after, you know, Travis Barker's plane crash was like Tom and Mark, you know, they show back up for Travis and he's horrifically burned and all this shit. And it begets the conversation of, should we do this again? And then, you know, they do, but they were in very different like business standpoints and very different places. And this is a little bit more natural because like then they broke up again because of business shit. But it's like a little bit less acrimonious. And then him and Mark started talking again. And then Mark's cancer diagnosis happens. And then like they're just being friends. So like you said, like I think it's a little bit more natural if it happens again, where it wasn't just forced upon. It's more like, you know what? We've been friends for a while. Why can't we do this? So anyway, Blink's great. Plus 44 is great. Chad Boxcar Racer. I would say Chad plus 44 to the Virgin Boxcar Racer. But I suppose
in our discussion it would be Chad plus 44 versus the Virgin Angels and Airwaves, but like, dude, some of the people I know just go absolutely fucking ape shit over Boxcar Racer. We're like, this is better than whatever Blink 182 did. It's like, all right, like, calm down.
I personally like Mark's style better than I like Tom's of like that general era. Like, and I like what Mark did better than like Angels and Airwaves. But yeah. Either way, I think it's incredible. We have such an uncanny ability to get to an hour 40 minutes, and you think we're not going to, but we will. Every time, like, clockwork.
Don't doubt us in the latter half of the episode, dude. Do not doubt us. We could stretch it. Once we get to Legend Killer, like, even if the segment before that is, even before the segment of that, if, like, even if we do 30 minutes, like, as soon as we hit Legend Killer, what are we listening to? Like, easy 45 minutes.
Easy, so easy. Just talk about bullshit. Anyway, though, we come to the end. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, boy, that's weird. You know, filthy fucking casuals. That's what you are, right? So the casual fan, why are you not talking about Elimination Chamber? Why are we not talking about Elimination Chamber, Ryan?
Because why?
Because it exists in the pocket universe of Saudi Arabia where we don't pay attention to the booking that happens over there because things get very strange. Goldberg always shows up and like now I don't know if Goldberg beats Roman and like I'm not doing it. Not doing it. And not no thank you.
We'll touch upon this, I guess.
I will talk about it if
the product is being catered to these shows.
Here's my promise.
I'm not a fan.
Here's my promise. If Brock Lesnar somehow does not win the Elimination Chamber, then I will talk about it. If he does win the Elimination Chamber, I will refuse. I will not engage. I will not discuss. We will just wait until WrestleMania happens, and then I will talk about WWE again. If Brock does not win Elimination Chamber, I will talk about why that's interesting.
Oh, Stone Cold returning. We forgot to fucking talk about it, dude.
Yeah, maybe Stone Cold's going to show back up. We don't know. Maybe The Rock also. The Rock's made some hints about, like, some stuff.
Non-jaded take. Stone Cold still looks ripped as fuck. If Sting can make it work, Stone Cold can make it work. That's all I'm going to say.
Look, here's my jaded take. If Stone Cold, like, had an actual match that lasted more than 30 seconds, I'd be hype as fuck. Like, that's just what that is. And I'd probably feel the same way about The Rock. So, like, bring him back. That's cool. Cody Rhodes, very cool. Outside of that, not talking about Elimination Chamber. But sure. Next time we talk, we will talk about Revolution because we'll be coming up right before that. So the card should be more solidified. We'll have a good idea of what's happening there. We can expect Hangman Adam Page defending against Adam Cole. All signs pointing to that. Should be a great match. I will say, though, of course, for anyone that missed it, Jay White has come to JEW, which, by the way, people then pointed out just spells Jew, so that's kind of weird. Jay didn't think that one out. It's very different than the US of J, isn't it? But Jay White showing up to AEW is so fucking cool. Also, New Japan has gone back to running shows. The Golden Series match that I would tell you guys to watch is Master Wato had a match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship against El Desperado, and this is probably Master Wato's finest work to date. I'm behind on Noah as well. There was a match like back in January, which was God damn it. You don't pay attention for like 2 seconds and you just forget everybody's fucking name. Nakajima had a match against Kiyomiya, which was really, really good. And like Sagira also had a match recently after. Next time I talk about Noah, I'll actually know what I'm talking about. But I have to catch back up with that. And like now New Japan's running again. So I gotta, you know, I've had a little bit of a lull in Japan because they took a lull, but whatever. Next time we talk, I'll have all the Puro wrestling you want to talk about. So anyway,
who's Kojima facing?
Satoshi?
Yeah.
In Noah?
Not in Noah, but he's facing someone in New Japan soon, and it looks like a cool match.
Let's take a little trip over to NJPW 1972, shall we? So, we'll probably talk about this because when does this take place? I think it's the last Golden Series is the 20th, and that is, I think, supposed to be, yeah, that's Okada versus Naito.
He's tagging with Okada versus Naito and Shingo. That's gonna be a cool match.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, the big one is the Golden Series is ending with Tanahashi versus Sonata for the IWGP US Championship, and then Okada versus Naito for the World Championship. Like I said, I know I'm very behind on my New Japan. Damien, how could you? Not cool. But by the time we get back to it, will be the start of the New Japan Cup. So I promise next time we meet, we'll talk about the New Japan Cup. We'll talk about what Noah's been doing. We'll talk about Revolution. We'll just have a grand old time. We'll just have so much fun. But anyway, until then, for Ryan, for myself, this has been the most electrifying, most big-brained, most powerful podcast in sports entertainment. This has been F. C.